Hello, everybody. Welcome to our next podcast in the series that Topaz has prepared in cooperation with Konrad Adenauer Stiftung as part of a project on democracy in the Visegrad countries. It's my great pleasure to be able to invite today Wojciech Przybylski, who is the editor-in-chief of Visegrad Insight at Respublika Foundation. Thank you for accepting our invitation.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
And the topic is something that, of course, is very interesting for all of us, as it is about the media in Visegrad, in the Visegrad countries, a topic that has attracted a lot of attention in the region, but also in Europe. You are a great expert on the topic. So again, thank you for finding the time to talk to us about it. If you could, the first question that's something that many of us are trying to understand and not always can. If you could characterize what is the current media environment in the Visegrad countries, what the countries share and what they differ.
Sure. Well, not an easy task for sure, because of the complexity, histories related to each particular country of the V4. Perhaps I would start on the EU level and the EU reference and relate to the recent Eurobarometer study conducted over and released a couple of months ago only. That's a major study on public opinion across the EU, in which the trust in media overall across the EU is, I think, on average 52%. Respondents trust in media overall. And that is significantly smaller percentage in the V4 countries. Perhaps Czech Republic is has one of the highest, with nearly the average, or if not exactly the average of the EU. But when it comes to then Slovakia, then Poland, and then Hungary, trust in media is at a record low, which is 10 points less and even lower, with one of the record low in Bulgaria. I mean, we're not talking Bulgaria here, but just to give you a geographical space that has something to do with it, I guess, we are facing a big problem related to what media are for. Media are not there to uphold some abstract institutions or, carry out, I don't know, political activism or anything else. They are, some say, the fourth estate, which is necessary for a democracy to function, for a functioning democracy. Media are the means through which people are running democracy, you know, for the people, by the people. The function of the fourth estate, it's not a branch of power. It's a check and balance mechanism that empowers societies is definitely at risk in Central Europe, but overall it's a larger picture. It's not just Central Europe, and the trends that precipitated and also in Central Europe have been there globally present. So how to characterize this? I would say that in Central Europe things are more advanced. In many ways, what is happening to the media sphere environment in Central Europe is both very pessimistic, but there are also some amazing things and developments to which we can relate, and because of which you can also say there are some optimistic trends. One element I would begin with, not to mention the element of trust and the civil society and even civic education and awareness of the importance of media, but on the other hand, also on the credibility of journalists and journalism itself, that very often were too much compromised because of the legacy of the past, of the history. The one element that is common for Central Europe is the problem of the finance, of the economy. We have published a study not so long ago on information sovereignty futures, which is defined again as a democratic aspect of the society, to have controls, have these means of controls through the media, over the government, over, you know, who the society is going to elect for the government. And for that, you need informed decision, you need quality information, I mean, quality information, you need reliable information from the media. This problem is really linked also to the economic models of the media in Central Europe. And this is one aspect. A second aspect is also related somehow to that, is the state of public and private, the definition, the legal aspect of that, the trust in the formats of the media that are related to what is public, what is private media. And then there is a whole bunch of elements that come with the trends on disinformation, modern hybrid war, social media, technology changes, but also certain elements of demographic changes, also the inflow of people to the urban centers and outflow from the provinces, which I also find is bringing a lot of disturbance to which we don't have immediate answers, as along with that comes a potential outflow, and in some ways we see that, of diversity of information, media pluralism in the countryside, while it's relatively okay in the centers, in the capitals. So I painted a couple of points, but I'll go very briefly into details of all of these. Economic models. We see in Central Europe that, especially after 2008, after the financial crisis, which everybody felt across the world, the media landscape has been shattered, and that's also globally. In Central Europe, that meant that media, especially it started with Hungary, were damaged so severely that they were not able to keep up the model that was based primarily on advertising. I mean, most of the media, they based their income on advertising, and with advertising gone, media were also in a very precarious situation. They were going after money, whichever money they could find, in order to sustain journalism. I mean, the essence of why media are important. This in Central Europe came across with the elections won by Viktor Orban, and he saw an opportunity in this crisis for himself, as every politician tries to influence the media. He had it easy. He decided to influence it, to undermine media from the very beginning of his term. He has been doing it systematically, putting more burdens and costs on the media that would not repeat the political messages he wanted the media to be repeating, and then also using his proxy to take over part by part the media landscape from foreign investors, including German investors, who were ready to pull out of the market because of the financial situation that the and the problems then. So that's something that started with Hungary, but it's already all across Central Europe. It's how the advertising market is still changing. The crisis has long gone. We have another COVID situation. Advertising is dramatically changing the situation of media, and that comes on top of the technological revolution. Half of the advertising budget, or equal budgets of the TV, the budgets of TV advertisement currently has been outmatched all across the countries by digital advertising, Facebook and Google. And that takes out revenue, that takes out air from the media environments as they used to be. So there is an urgency to develop new media models, business models. And that is most difficult in Hungary. Things are starting to not look so good in Poland, but also for other reasons. The second reason, and I hint here to Poland, but that has already started in Hungary, was a takeover of the government of the public media, an attempt that we have seen also across many other countries. We have been observing similar trends very recently, very worryingly in Czechia also. There were attempts also in Slovakia, but in Poland it has actually happened, like in Hungary, that the government appointed boards and management boards and directors of the TV and radio, public radio, paid from public taxes money, has been absolutely biased in political communication towards the government and against, in a very vicious way, against all the other political parties, as if you know, the public media became an instrument, and the political domain became an instrument of consolidating parties, the governing parties' constituency, the base, the electoral base. And that is a development that we see, and we will we can also track it to many other places. I mean, there is a debate about that in the UK. Boris Johnson's government has been looking at it. There were attempts, there were strong discussions in Lithuania, in Estonia about it too. But I think in the case of Poland and Hungary specifically, we have observed something to the extreme of what it could be if public media is taken over by the government. Then there are regulatory aspects, and it's much about putting pressure and burden on publishers. We have seen this in Slovakia. Slovakia was, I think, the first of the four countries, even before Viktor Orban, if I remember at the very beginning of Viktor Orban's term, when Slovakia was pushing very much burdens on the media, for the right of politicians to publish extensive rebuttals to whatever media were writing about. So that has been not put in place, but still legislative appetites in different countries are strong, and they are as if politicians were never educated, you know, as civic citizens of the country, what media are for. And they think they're instruments of political gain for them. I might stop here, and I guess we can touch upon the, several other aspects.
It's of course very important, and what you say is it's very worrisome. At some point, you mentioned the technological revolution. You wrote once that what has once been named as the digital age now becomes more understood as the age of disinformation. Why do you think this happened? And do we have any remedies for this situation at this point?
Well, technological progress, we know it happens, and brought a lot of tools to the media. But I think media missed a strategic opportunity, and they came about with ideas how to catch up only after the financial crisis. They missed an opportunity to build relationship and build trust through internet with their readerships, with their readers, with their recipients when it comes to TV, online TV, and so on. And these strategies were overlooked and downplayed by traditionalists sometimes in their approach, media publishers. There is a big opportunity, and I'll start with opportunity and promises of technological revolution, that if captured by media can bring back a balance, the necessary agency of civil society, of society overall, over the governance of their countries through the help of media and information. But what happened instead there is the demand for information from a society. But in the situation that we described already, with a lack of trust in media because of legacy problem under communism, you know, media were mostly compromised because they were implicated politically before. And in the situation when technology on internet, you would find more information, but not hasn't been organized and properly managed from the point of view of media. What came about, in my opinion, were very, very, you know, lots of different projects. And sometimes fantastic citizen journalism, but very often it already became an area of battle where, like a wild, wild west to be conquered by pioneers who weren't essentially the moral beings in the sense of good citizens. And that happened, of course, through social media, not only but primarily. And that has been a window of opportunity for something we have seen also throughout 20th century, a propaganda done by modern technological means. It used to be radio, it used to be TV. It was obvious that Russians specifically, but not only them, will use the modern technology to try to influence and demoralize democratic attitudes in Central Europe, but all that was across the world. And I think we were missing this gap. And because we missed this gap, the age of digitalization became an age of disinformation. But at the same time, I wanted to say that, as I started optimistically, there are signs and there are examples of media catching up and building up their resilience. We can name a few. I mean, Dennik N is one case. Gazeta Wyborcza has a record number of, in Poland, has a record number of subscribers and also committed readers. They're also changing formats from this objective journalism to more kind of New York Times strategy of more activism journalism. Things are putting some people out of balance. But these are the new developments. And I think that with the technology that we see today, we also can use technology to balance out and put out some of the disinformation out of the game. And especially when it comes to, you know, automated mechanisms that prevent automated disinformation or automated algorithms that track fraud online. Digital is just a toolbox. It's also about the people who are aware of the technology and whether they know how to defend themselves against those who are less scrupulous when it comes to influencing democracies.
I have to say that I was one of the people who did underestimate the developments, and I was not expecting that this would happen. So I have an understanding for the media. Do you think that all this taken together, and you did mention the dangers of this for democracy, that it is possible that the Visegrad countries would actually slide away from democracy?
We are at serious risk of losing our democratic process. You know, democracy is not something you can attain. You cannot. It's not a service you buy, you acquire, you own. It's nothing like a working shop or a tool. It's much more of a process. And there was the democratic revolution in the first place, and there was a democratic transition. It was all building up. Again, democratic process. Institution of democracy is a process of electing, changing power, informed public debate, exactly, which requires media, a rule of law, which is not about written law, but how the law is being formed and applied in the process of, you know, people leaving, building up their economies. And many of these processes are starting to look corrupt at best, and start also slide back to what was something before democratic revolution started in Central Europe. So yes, when we look at Hungary, I think the processes there are not democratic at this stage. And Hungary needs to win back its democracy. That's obvious for me. In Poland, there is democratic backsliding as well. It is primarily due to rule of law, to the mess Poland has created in its legal system, and secondly, because also of the political polarization of the two camps, so much distrustful of each other that basically we are vulnerable to take over of our democracy also by disinformation of, you know, messages that the other side will believe is true because it attacks the enemy or the political, you know, someone who should be called only political contender, competitor, but very often we hear the narrative about enemies. So yes, the issue of corruption in Czechia at the top of the political at the top political level, that is something worrying, that there is in Slovakia, there was a major issue still unresolved about the justice system. That is something we really have, and that depends on the perspective. We either are losing or we haven't fought for enough yet, and maybe the fight is never over. I see that more on the side of incomplete process, incomplete achievements, some that were overlooked. And because they were overlooked, many other achievements can be backtracked, or we can lose many of the points that we gained already. And we see that in different index scores of democracy indices warn us against this. What again puts more hopeful, but I hope not naive, perspective is the people. I mean, people want democracy, accountability overall. Any politicians that misuses that, includes be it oligarchical structures, business interests, or simply stealing and large level organized thieves, or even corrupt media. I mean, there are people in journalism who I would never call journalists because they do simply black PR. That's what they are good at. These are contributing factors, but there is somehow a belief in me that, I mean, that on which our democracies have been built, and people simply want fair and good life for themselves and for the societies. People are not bad by definition. They choose usually, they are inclined to do good and to make good choices. And sometimes they're lost. I think the times of crisis often create the confusion. And of course, there are also problems with those who were portraying and who were embodying hopes for democracy in the past, and then compromised each other, and they cannot admit that. And there were a few cases also in Hungary that started with Mr. Gyurcsány. In many other cases, we had democratic leaders who, despite many achievements, also didn't know when to step down and to say, self-restraint is a virtue that should be reminded to them.
Could not agree with you more. I remember a discussion I had 2 years ago with one of the prominent Czech political scientists, and what she was mentioning was the problem in the countries where the unfinished institutionalization, the relatively weak institutions, which then are prone to face the personalities of the leaders that they cannot actually stand up against them. She was saying she was warning against that for quite some time, and now we are living with the consequences of underestimating the importance of very strong institutions. Of course, during the time that we all lived through, and everybody talking about how the pandemic has changed our private lives and our work lives and academia, education, economy, I do have to ask you a question about the impact of the pandemic on the media in the Visegrad 4. I mean, it's an obvious question, but of course it's very important because bringing up exactly the digital age and the technological revolution as one of the ways how we got through, also highlighting some of the weaknesses. Has there been any impact of the pandemic on the Visegrad media?
Well, yes and no. I mentioned one element and then we didn't continue the centralization of media. I guess you're sitting in Prague right now. Am I correct? I assume so, at least. I'm in Warsaw, capital cities, many other big cities in the region. They do not display the problem with plurality of opinion, the plurality of media. These centers are booming they're vibrant economically, they're vibrant also when it comes to media and journalism. The problem starts in the province, where you cannot say that the province or the rural areas further away from city centers, they are not democratic. And COVID had a big impact there. First, because of the paper press, where paper press has been circulated there, it's basically ceased to be circulated throughout the pandemic. There were serious limitations on the numbers of the volumes of paper being sold there. Secondly, of course, advertising went down in the initial months of the pandemic. And then I think it went back, but still digital advertising is the preference anyway, instead of this old school, or you would say traditional forms of media, like, you know, paper, newspapers and paper print media. So these are definitely, this is something to observe and to see, and politicians and political ambitions have been there, and there was a takeover preying on the weak in Poland. The publisher of local regional titles from Passauer Press, it was the owner was it was a German owner, sold it to the public company, public meaning controlled by the government, and now it's becoming again a governmental propaganda, and then journalists are being fired or they are being replaced with those who are going to be more obedient to the message of the government. So these are examples of what has been happening. But I also wanted to say that, interestingly, and there was an opportunity that many media have seen, and that's across the world and including the region, those who are technologically advanced. Again, the problem is that it's usually about those in the center, but not on the periphery. And those titles, those media brands have been aggressively building up their subscribers base, and people were willing to pay for information during COVID pandemic, for reliable information, because of what was at stake and what is still at stake when it comes to, you know, information that is about general global situation, our country developments, health issues, and the validity of information. So people somehow, in my mind, on one side were committed to their titles and they wanted to upkeep the titles, to keep them going, to get reliable information. And maybe some people simply wanted to come to a conclusion that if they want to have a reliable information, they need to contribute a little bit financially to make sure that, you know, they pay, therefore they demand. And that's what we have seen in the numbers in across the board in globally and in Central Europe in particular. Again, the two cases that I mentioned, Dziennik and Gazeta Wyborcza, these were the ones that switched to subscription models. We have seen more conservative or liberal conservative daily Dziennik Gazeta Prawna doing the same, exactly during the pandemic, investing into a transition model that would help them go ahead. We have seen HVG, HVG in Hungary building up their subscription model. Telex also building a very successful, first ever successful Hungarian crowdfunding for the media, I would say, of that scale, and now they're building up themselves for the future to be in the game with subscription in the, maybe, you know, in the longer term strategy. So these are the new elements that definitely are developments, not only problems in Central European perspective.
Is it possible, and of course, we can talk about the European level, but specifically for the Visegrad societies, to make sure that we do not oppress groups in the society, while at the same time we also actually respect one of the constitutional rights, which is the freedom of speech.
I think that it's a universal problem, and then everybody tries to find its own solution. I'm not seeking for legal solutions here. Of course, there exist some, and you can relate to the law and try to define what is hate speech or not. But it's not practical. The hate speech is usually, or to my mind, the hate speech is when there is lack of lack of possibility to be shameful, for, you know, someone is not ashamed to say what is being considered then hate speech, to accuse someone, to smear, sometimes even under their very own name. And that problem, of course, grows when it's not stopped, when it remains unchecked. And the only solution, to my mind, is of people who see problem, and these are different bubbles, to understand that nobody's alone in that. And when people present themselves as a group, putting a finger and, you know, putting a shame on the person who does that, that's the response. Because first, it gives comfort to a person who has been attacked, or groups of people who have been attacked, a commonality of response, you know, from general civil society, society overall, or societal groups. That's very important, because hate speech usually undermines psychological comfort of, you know, your own evaluation, your own dignity. And this dignity needs to be protected and restored by like-minded people, not by returning fire. Sometimes maybe it's necessary on a limited scale, but by dominating the discussion. And again, as I say, putting shame on someone, saying that there is a shame in what someone is doing else, and providing a comfort of a group, of a support for those who are under attack. So that takes an effort of bravery, you would say. It's sometimes uncommon among a liberal approach, because very often it's about leave me alone attitude, and saying that you know, nobody should tell me anything and I don't belong to any group. But unfortunately, the reality of today, perhaps even amplified by digital tools, is that nobody's alone. We're all parts of different groups, and these groups need to organize themselves, come together. And especially that, again, I have strong belief that majority of people do not like what we call generally hate speech, do not like radicalism, do not like people to feel bad and to feel offended. And it simply takes courage and a certain belief, I would say again, that comes with civic education, that you need to stand up and speak out in defense of someone else, because you're speaking in self-defense, partly, so that, you know, that you're, that these groups are not alone. And the, by practice of building up this resilience, you're able to stop not only hate speech, but also disinformation. And you have seen this, you actually have groups which copy-pasted Lithuanian so-called elves fighting online trolls. That's very much about that. It's about coming together, uniting on a good cause, on a noble cause, in protecting people who are unjustly attacked, providing them support, vocal support, and dominating the discussion whenever it's important. Because the trolls who are in minority take majority of the space because they're allowed to. They're let by the majority take that space, part of society who is disengaged. So being engaged, being firm defenders of the principles and speaking out is much more important in this process than defining, you know, specific legal boundaries or definition of what is hate speech or not. I mean, in a way, you know hate speech when you see it or you hear it.
Thank you so much for joining us today. For this very interesting discussion on the Visegrad 4 and the media, a topic that we all follow and is very interesting. Thank you very much again. Thank you for joining. Thank you, Karl Stiftung, for supporting this this project. And we hope that at some point we will be able to see you and hear you again.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Lucy. And pleasure to chat. We'll speak soon, for sure.
I hope so. Have a great time. Thank you.
Thanks.